Earth Eats is a production of WFIU and Indiana Public Media.
Welcome to Earth Eats, a show of real food and green living. I'm Annie Corrigan.
Yeah, it sometimes feels a little bit like an addiction, but for the most part, I think it's a healthy addiction. Although sometimes when I'm standing up from the ground and it's taking me a while to straighten out my knees, I kind of wonder.
That's Marcia Veldman, coordinator of the Bloomington Community Farmers Market. In part two of our conversation, she talks about her obsession with growing food and what food justice means to her. From Harvest Public Media, thanks to budget cuts, there may be fewer dollars allocated for conservation of land. We speak with the author of a new cookbook all about quinoa, and that's the ingredient of choice for Chef Daniel Orr in the kitchen today. That's all coming up. Anna Coogan is sitting in for Luann Johnson this week. She's got a look at our food news headlines.
There was a lot of action on the farm bill this week. On Tuesday, the Senate voted to keep a $400 million annual cut to the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or food stamps, as part of the Farm Bill. The House and Senate have differed sharply on how much food aid should be cut, with the House version of the Farm Bill proposing to cut five times more than the Senate bill. Resolving the differences on SNAP between the two chambers will be key to passage of the five-year Farm Bill. Lawmakers are attempting to push it through for the third year in a row. In 2012, more than 47 million people used SNAP. The food assistance program has more than doubled in cost since 2008. On Thursday, the Senate voted overwhelmingly against an amendment to the Farm Bill that would have allowed states to decide if they wanted to require labeling of foods that contain genetically modified ingredients. Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont sponsored the amendment. He put forth a similar amendment last year, but it was voted down as well. He promised this week to keep trying, saying, quote, "The people of Vermont and the people of America have a right to know what's in the food they eat," unquote. Meanwhile, in Connecticut, the state Senate passed legislation that would require GMO labeling by a vote of 35-1. The bill now moves to the state House. Similar legislation is also moving forward in Maine and Vermont. 64 countries across the world have laws on the books regulating GMOs. In fact, last week in Hungary, officials burned 1,000 acres of Monsanto's genetically engineered corn after new crop testing regulations led to its discovery. Hungary banned the cultivation of Monsanto's corn back in 2006. Get the latest updates about the Farm Bill and GMO labeling on our Twitter feed and Facebook page. Search for Earth Eats.
Great stuff today. Anna Coogan, thanks.
You're welcome.
With a new farm bill, farmers may have access to fewer dollars for conservation. For 27 years, the popular Conservation Reserve Program has transformed small parcels of land, contributing to cleaner water, more habitat for migrating birds, and less soil erosion. But as Harvest Public Media's Amy Mayer reports from Iowa, the program has been enrolling fewer acres in recent years, and it's not just budget cuts that could make it smaller still.
Environmental specialist Sean McCoy works for the Iowa Department of Agriculture. He's driving to a spot in Boone County where there's a brand new wetland thanks to the Conservation Reserve Program, or CRP.
This is like the headwaters of the Onion Creek watershed right here, the beginning of it. And this is all CRP here, this whole big 80 acres here.
Pectoral sandpipers peck along the shore of this new small pond. Canada geese float on the water. Two landowners here will get payments from the federal government in exchange for not farming this land for 10 or 15 years and implementing a conservation plan. McCoy says water will pool here in the spring and fall, providing habitat for these birds. Then, native plants will take over.
In the years to come, that vegetation will denitrify all the nitrates that are in the water.
Water that comes from 500 acres of mostly farmland. The state partners with the U.S. Department of Agriculture to expand CRP's reach. This new wetland will contribute to a larger watershed project McCoy coordinates.
We want to improve the health of the watershed, to improve the health of the water, and to improve the health of everything downstream, I think, you know. So that's kind of the way I look at it.
That greater good notion fuels state-federal partnerships, but it doesn't necessarily motivate farmers. In 2012, CRP paid farmers $1.7 billion. The number of acres enrolled in the program peaked in 2007. It has fallen every year since. Last year saw the lowest enrollment since 1989. High grain prices are one reason farmers keep farming. But 3 hours southeast in Washington, Iowa, farmer John Berto is committed to conservation.
We've done field borders. We've done the strips along creeks and about anything we can to conserve soil for my sons and my grandsons.
He's had acres enrolled in CRP since at least 1995.
See, this used to be a little three-cornered patch. It came with the farm and was, oh, there goes some deer.
We've stopped beside an 8-acre CRP-funded tree stand.
The government paid me some real money and we planted it to these trees and it's just turned out beautiful.
It also helps prevent erosion. The USDA says CRP projects have restored millions of acres of wetlands and kept hundreds of millions of pounds of nitrogen and phosphorus out of waterways nationwide. Berto sees the benefits for long-term soil health and does some conservation work without help from Uncle Sam. That's because he sees the fertility of his land as his son's future.
I'm 62 years old. If it wasn't for my two sons, I'd run this operation another till I'm 70 or something, and I'd farm it fence row to fence row.
With today's high grain prices, some farmers are choosing not to renew CRP contracts as they expire. That's a trend Mark Rasmussen has noticed in Iowa. He's director of the Leopold Center for Sustainable Agriculture at Iowa State University.
We've got a lot of CRP land that has been brought back out into production. In driving around the state these past few months, I've seen a lot of piles of trees sitting around, too, where little small acres, little odd corners and fields have that used to be in trees or something have been pulled out so that that land can be brought into production, too.
So while today you can drive across the Midwest and see trees, birds, and grasses on land the federal government has paid farmers to stop farming, those vistas may not last. Contracts on 3.3 million acres of CRP land will expire in September. By then, there should be a new farm bill, and we'll find out how much land it allows for CRP and how many farmers choose to stick with or join the program. I'm Amy Mayer, Harvest Public Media.
Read and listen to more stories from the reporting team at Harvest Public Media on their website, harvestpublicmedia.org.
Down in Arkansas, they serve you coleslaw, chopped up finer than a bale of straw. When you crunch and gnaw, a bunch of coleslaw keeps you chewing like a crosscut saw. Exercise your jaw by eating coleslaw, best old goodness that you ever saw. You can break no law by wanting coleslaw. It ain't nothing but some cabbage raw. It can't be beat, just a simple southern treat. It's fine with me, or with anything you eat. Your chops flip-flop, you're enjoying every drop. Your teeth go bop, you'll never stop. Yes, in Arkansas, they serve you cold.
We spoke with Marcia Veldman last week about what she would like to see from the new farm bill. This week, it's not about policy. It's about her love of growing food. In addition to her duties as coordinator of the Bloomington Community Farmers Market, she grows food on Meadowlark Farms. She's been farming since she was a little girl. And one of her first aha moments came when her neighbor plucked one of his coxcomb flowers for her to look at.
And he asked me to hold out my hand and kind of tipped the flower over and some seeds fell into my hand. And that was like my first realization that I didn't have to buy seeds in a packet, that they didn't come out of packets. Yeah, this like kind of circle of life was like, woo. I should have caught on a lot sooner. But
when I talk to people who gardened or farmed as a kid with their families, a lot of them say, I needed a break. I had to take a step back. I worked too hard as a kid and I hated it. And then they eventually come back to it a little bit later in life. But it sounds like you've just had it in your blood this whole time.
I have. Yeah, yeah, it sometimes feels a little bit like an addiction, but for the most part, I think it's a healthy addiction. Although sometimes when I'm standing up from the ground and it's taking me a while to straighten out my knees, I kind of wonder, is the extent I'm doing a healthy addiction?
The first line in your bio says you're an advocate for food justice.
Mm-hmm.
What is food justice?
Food justice. You know, it for me kind of, I guess, encompasses food from the time it's being grown in the fields to when it's on our plates. And it involves creating a healthful place for people who are growing the food, you know, so that the people who are raising the food we eat aren't exposed to chemicals that are harmful to them, that they receive a fair wage for the labor that they do, and continues on to that healthy food is accessible to everyone, that that's a right to healthy food. And it's really unfortunate that where we are right now in food policy in the United States is that corn and soybeans, these big commodity crops, are so heavily subsidized that it makes things that are made with corn syrup, for example, very inexpensive, but they're very bad for you. You know, 99 cents for a 2-liter soda bottle, highly processed, has nothing in it for you. And yet, you know, a bag of apples costs several dollars. That's just wrong. It should be, we as a country should set policy that works to get healthy food to people. That is a food. I think Michael Pollan said it should be the food bill, not the farm bill.
You can speak to this next question from two angles, one as a grower, one as the coordinator of the farmers market. Talk about the difficulties for small local farmers as they're trying to get their food to local tables.
There's quite a few challenges in that. You know, one, we talked a little bit about just the unpredictability of weather, and you just never know from season to season how a particular crop is going to fare, you know. So one year you plant an acre of sweet potatoes and you have like way more than you can use and or sell. And then the next year you plant that same amount and you're running out in October. So, yeah, it's very unpredictable crops. And then when you start talking about perishable items, that gets even more tricky because, you know, with something like sweet potatoes, well, you can sell them the next week and, you know, come up with other game plans. When you're talking about a tomato, you've got a short window to get it to where it needs to be. And inevitably, you're going to have times where the plants are at their most productive and all of a sudden you're kind of like, woo, I've got a whole bunch of green beans. You know? So there's that aspect. And then we did also talk a little bit about customer expectations. Well, I think this area has changed remarkably, at least here in Bloomington, in the last few years, where customers aren't always looking for perfection in produce, but also in their looking at it from a different perspective and, you know, wanting to focus more on seasonality and not, you know, looking for sweet corn in May. That they kind of get that. Mm-hmm. Regulations can be challenging, and, you know, I'm not anti-regulation by any means because I think it's important for food safety that we do have good, sound regulations, but all too often they aren't scale appropriate, so they are more focused on these big, huge produce farms and not on small-scale farms like the ones that are selling at the farmers market. Yeah. Subsidies for agribusiness. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and it's not just commodity crops. I mean, when oil is subsidized the way it is, that means that, you know, petrochemicals are subsidized for a small local farmer who is not as dependent on that. Makes it challenging. So, yeah, there are quite a few challenges that small farmers face, and it's amazing they keep going.
You know? It's amazing all these aspects of our food that sometimes we don't think about. The transportation to get it places. I bet a lot of people out there, myself included, don't think about that as I'm biting into a tomato that I've gotten at a big box grocery store.
Right. For me, eating is really a pretty intimate act. I mean, really, you are taking in sun, soil, water, very much immersing yourself in your food. It's becoming a part of you. And I love the connectedness of knowing where my food came from. It just makes a meal feel more special when I'm like, oh, yeah, and these tomatoes came from such and such. And, you know, knowing the people who raised it, it makes it feel special to have a meal.
Put on your farmer's market coordinator hat one more time for me. For people looking at the Bloomington Farmer's Market as sort of the goal that they want to achieve in their community, give some tips, tricks, advice.
We get a lot of inquiries from people who are interested in starting farmers markets in their communities or trying to build on the markets they have. And while I think there's a lot of good things that can be learned from our community market, one, I think it does need to be kind of specific to the needs of a community. And I think this market didn't start this way. And that's important to remember. It started with 23 vendors in Third Street Park, the park right behind the police station there. So that's where it started. And it's taken time to grow. And I think that's something that people starting in a market need to understand. Because we can, we like to really emphasize the farm vendor aspect of it. But that's not necessarily the best place for everybody to start. Sometimes you need to grow it.
Patience.
Yes. Patience. Farming and farmers markets are both about patience.
Listen to my complete conversation with Marcia Veldman on WFIU's Profiles. That'll be airing on Sunday, June 16th at 7 p.m. Coming up, Chef Daniel Orr marvels at the cooperative power of nature.
Now, if you were to grow your own quinoa, you would need to really wash it well because it's coated with kind of a bitter coating, dusty coating, that the plant creates actually to make birds spit it out. So birds would eat it and they'd spit it out and it would make the plant grow different places.
The dish he's throwing together today is simple and versatile. Before that, we speak with the author of a new cookbook featuring nothing but quinoa recipes. Stay with us. Production support for Earth Eats comes from Blooming Foods. Fresh, local, organic food with delis at all three locations and a garden center on East 3rd Street. BloomingFoods.coop. Touchstone Wellness, therapeutic massage and hatha yoga, offering a variety of healing massage styles and yoga levels. Memberships and gift certificates available. More at TouchstoneWellness.com. And Designscape Horticultural Services, designing sustainable growth for a changing environment for over 25 years, building living soil for edibles and ornamentals with enhanced compost tea, and boosting plant health by enriching soil biology. 812-988-8900 or designhort.com. Welcome back to Earth Eats. I'm Annie Corrigan. Every week we speak with authors putting out everything from cookbooks to food history books. This week it's a book called The Quinoa Revolution, over 150 healthy, great-tasting recipes under 500 calories. Author Carolyn Hemming and her sister Patricia Green are quinoa lovers from way back, so they're enjoying the recent trendiness of eating this edible seed.
Yeah, it's kind of taking the culinary world by storm, really.
In fact, Carolyn and Patricia have branded themselves as the quinoa sisters.
Not only is it great tasting, and you can use it in a myriad of applications, but it also happens to be a complete protein. It's full of vitamins, full of minerals, great for vegetarians, gluten-free, high in fiber, low glycemic index, complex carbohydrates. I mean, the list goes on.
Here's 1 minute with Carolyn Hemming, where she talks about sprouting quinoa.
So sprouting quinoa, really distilled water, half a cup of quinoa. You want to make sure that everything is really clean, including your clean glass or your dish, and that you've got a lid for it. Pour the distilled water, cover the quinoa, give it a little bit of a stir, and soak it for about 40 minutes at room temperature, and then strain it off after that, drain the seeds, and give them a bit of a rinse with some more distilled water, and then rinse out the dish as well, of course, and then return the wet quinoa rather to the dish and cover it again. Leave a little tiny opening to get a little bit of air in there, and then put it in the fridge or a dark, cool location, and rinse it, you know, every 8 to 10 hours until the quinoa is sprouted to however long you want it. You know, quinoa germinates in 2 to 4 hours, so, you know, you can sprout it really quick and have small sprouts, or you can let it sprout to 8 hours and have a longer, more, you know, substantial sprout.
Thank you, Carolyn. It's been such a pleasure.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Great. Have a great one.
You too. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye. Read the complete interview with Carolyn Hemming on our website. You'll also hear about a recipe for Black Forest goat cheese brownies using quinoa flour. The picture alone will activate your sweet tooth, I'm sure. See it at eartheats.org. Let's stop talking about quinoa and actually start cooking with it. Chef Daniel Orr has a bag of rainbow quinoa in the kitchen today. It's a combination of white, red, and black quinoa.
All right. We ready to go?
Do it.
Okay, well, it's all about quinoa today.
Yeah.
It's something that we've been seeing in the big restaurants and health food restaurants for a few years now, but it's really becoming mainstream, and everybody knows that it's a very healthy seed, and it originates from South America, and it's got a lot of protein in it. Now, if you were to grow your own quinoa, you would need to really wash it well because it's coated with kind of a bitter coating, dusty coating, that the plant creates actually to make birds spit it out. So birds would eat it and they'd spit it out and it would make the plant grow different places. So it's another one of those wonders that, you know, animals and plants living together on this earth. We're going to start with a little bit of oil. You could use kind of a pumice olive oil, a kind of inexpensive olive oil. We've got a nice hot pan. Quickly, we're going to add the garlic. Now, you don't want your garlic to get too dark, so you need to have your onions ready. It's just brown, boom. So that was about 2 tablespoons of garlic, 1.5 cups, 2 cups of onions. We're going to add just a touch of water to that, and that's going to help it steam and cook those onions quickly. And we're going to let that water evaporate out of there. Season these with a little bit of salt and pepper and some thyme leaves. I've got probably about a teaspoon of fresh thyme leaves, salt and pepper, and a little bit of lemon zest. Again, one of my favorite secret ingredients. Okay, and then in the meantime, you have your quinoa on cooking. And basically what I like to do is to toast the quinoa in just a little bit of oil until it gets a little nutty. Then I cover it with water. It takes about 12 to 15 minutes to cook. Then you let it sit, and then you take a fork and kind of aerate it. And when you've used the rainbow quinoa, you really get all these extra colors, which really make it beautiful. We're going to continue to cook the onions until they're nice and brown. You can see they're very well caramelized. We're going to add our quinoa to this. I grab a spoon. And we're just going to check the seasoning. Again, it's so important. A lot of people follow recipes to a T, and then they forget to check the seasoning. Let me give it a taste now. A little salt and pepper. Got to squeeze a little fresh lime juice or lemon juice on top. And again, this is a great side dish. Would be good with any type of roast meat. wonderful as a bed underneath things, like you could put a piece of grilled salmon on top of it. You could also cool this down or use your leftovers as a salad the next day, or put it in a pita sandwich, or use it just about any way you wanted to. So very, very versatile. Okay, we're going to serve this. And one thing I always have at the restaurant are roasted tomatoes. I'm going to grab a couple of these. They're nice and herbaceous, tossed in herbs and olive oil and roasted in the oven. Throw a touch of the Irish, a little green on top. And there you go. That's our rainbow quinoa with roasted tomatoes and a touch of the Irish.
We've been enjoying cooking with flowers over the past several weeks, and it's about time for the lavender to start blooming. So we dug around in our archives for this recipe. It's lavender lemonade.
These are great for kids. You know, you probably want to get your kids away from some of those carbonated drinks. So in the summertime, utilize stuff out of the garden, stuff from the farmer's market, and make your own cocktails for the kids. I mean, some of these will have some sugar in it, but, you know, I've got some organic sugar, which is a little bit healthier for the planet to produce. But, you know, I'd say just any kind of either cane sugar or beet sugar is better than high fructose corn syrup. All right, so what we're going to do is we're going to go back and do another simple syrup, which we've done many times on Earth Eats. It's equal parts sugar and water. Okay, we're going to bring that to a boil. All right, we're going to add some lavender to that. You know, a nice little handful, I would say.
Stems and all.
Stems and all are in there, and you can use the leaves. And if you want to taste that, I'll give you a little.
Oh, that is amazing. The smell turned into taste.
Yeah, I do lavender ice cream sometimes. You can also make a vinaigrette, a lavender vinaigrette. It's nice to crumble up some of the lavender flowers, mix them with breadcrumbs, and sprinkle them on top of a roasted fish.
Add a half cup of the simple syrup with lavender and a half cup of lemon juice to a pitcher. Then fill the pitcher the rest of the way with sparkling water.
And you could take it to the table like that, and you can see there's kind of this layer of the syrup and lemon juice in the bottom with that kind of light lavender hue. And then right before you serve it, take your iced teaspoon, stir it up, and that is our summertime lavender lemonade.
This is one of a trio of drink recipes we made that afternoon. See the recipes for apple juice and cherry fizz on our website. Oh, and Chef Orr garnished the quinoa recipe with roasted tomatoes, if you remember. It's nowhere near tomato season just yet, but keep that recipe in mind in the next couple months. It's so good and adds color and tastiness to literally any dish. Get some culinary inspiration at eartheats.org. Thanks to everyone who helps make Earth Eats possible, including Ben Alford, Aabon Binder, Anna Coogan, Carolyn Hemming, Liz Leslie, Daniel Orr, Marcia Veldman, and the entire team at Harvest Public Media. Production support for Earth Eats comes from Blooming Foods, fresh, local, organic food with delis at all three locations and a garden center on East 3rd Street, bloomingfoods.coop. Touchstone Wellness, therapeutic massage, and Hatha Yoga, offering a variety of healing massage styles and yoga levels. Memberships and gift certificates available. More at touchstonewellness.com. And Designscape Horticultural Services, designing sustainable growth for a changing environment for over 25 years, building living soil for edibles and ornamentals with enhanced compost tea, and boosting plant health by enriching soil biology. 812-988-8900 or designhort.com. Earth Eats is a production of WFIU and Indiana Public Media. Will Murphy, executive producer. Thanks for being with us today. Till next week, happy eating. I'm Annie Corrigan.